All right, let's continue with our family and dusty reality. We'll be talking about communication, and this is a very broad term of what I'm trying to cover. But we've seen the importance of the father leading his family. We need to be instructing in doctrine and setting the direction of the family and getting it on track as a family unit. The father and leader needs to train or equip his team to accomplish this vision or calling that God has laid upon him. Now, the father has the authority to do this. He's been given this authority by God, and it's a real authority. It's not something he's usurped and tried to pick up on the sideline somewhere. And he does all these things because of this authority, and he's got to do it according to what God has said. Okay, so we've covered all those kinds of things as we've been going along. But the reason we are doing what we're doing, the reason what we are setting the agenda for our family and directing them, is because we have authority, and that's been given to us by God, and there's for responsibility. And we saw that the purpose of this authority is to be in the forefront of our endeavor. What is the purpose? And that's dominion, accomplishing God's goals and God's purposes, and advancing his dominion over all things. So the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, and therefore everything belongs to him and ought to be glorifying him. And so God is glorified when we do things according to his truth. So being leaders, as fathers and husbands, a leader's authority is delegated to us from God, and he's told us not only what to do, but how to do it, in the manner in which we go about doing it. So in a sense, what we're going to do tonight is just look at and bring in maybe a needed balance of caution to those who might accuse us when we talk about the authority of the husband, the authority of the father, is to always paint that in the picture of this tyrannical leader, this patriarchal monster that they use in the modern term. Patriarchy, by the way, in the modern term is often used in a very negative sense. It's kind of shown across as this domineering, authoritarian light. So all authority is to be used within the parameters that God sets up. So when a father and husband is to direct and correct, this is important what he has to do. So, but when he's got to do this, directing and correcting, what's his example? Who's his example? It's obviously Christ. Christ is the example that we are trying to imitate. Now, there are two terms, I think, that are very important that come together in Christ that cover both these aspects that we need to have as leaders. We can see it exemplified in his life, but I think just in him as the person, these two concepts come together very clearly. And one is the absolute truth. Okay, so there's this truth that's unbending. This is what the truth is. This is how it's going to be. This is where it's going to go. Okay, so in a sense, the Father is taking his authority from Christ in that sense. He's leading his family according to truth. That's why we stand. That's why we can make tough decisions and say, sorry guys, I can't budge on this. Because I'm standing on truth. It's absolute, and I'm trying to honor Christ in doing that. The Father's got the responsibility to do that. So we mustn't apologize for it, and we are not to feel ashamed about it. And the other thing that is exalted in Christ is the love and the mercy. Okay, so we see these two things, the absolute truth and the mercy. As we read in John chapter 1 and verse 14, where it's introducing us to the Word that became flesh. It says, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. And when you meditate upon that, you see the incredible beauty that comes out because of Christ, the grace and the truth. Because what you've got, you know, your perception, as we've been talking in our sermons, with the law of God and the standard of God's truth, that's the truth. It doesn't bend. But then what God brings in with Christ is the grace together with that. And these two are together what make the gospel a glorious message. In John 1 again, in verse 17 this time, we read again that the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. We're not going to get into, does that now do away with the law, because that, we know that's not the case. But I don't want to expound that verse tonight. I assure you, it's not doing away with the law there. It's just the grace and truth came with Jesus Christ. So you get this meshing together. And we've got to see ourselves as fathers and husbands. We've got to see this meshing together in our leadership style, in our leadership approach of the truth, the absolute truth. We're not budging, but there's this grace or mercy that is together with it. And it's an important combination that we've got to have in our thinking and in the way we execute our office. Though God reveals an absolute word, there is truth. He also, together with that word, gives us mercy. So in the mercy side, he doesn't compromise his truth. God never compromises that truth. And we as fathers must not compromise the truth either. But at the same time, we've got to understand this important side of mercy and grace. So this is the glory of the gospel, which the psalmist spoke about in Psalm 85 and verse 10, where he talked about mercy and truth have met together. So that you can see the psalmist, you can see the guys with understanding the law of God and say, there's truth. But then mercy and truth have messed together. And then he continues. And he says, righteousness and peace have kissed each other. So you've got this righteousness, this demand, and this peace with God and man. And they've actually come together in close proximity and made friends in a sense. That's why in Proverbs we read, Proverbs 16 verse 6, "In mercy and truth, atonement is provided for iniquity. And by the fear of the Lord, one departs from evil." So in mercy and truth, atonement is provided. So once again, we see that that's what our redemption is grounded in. So fundamental to the working of God's plan of redemption is this joining together of an absolute truth or righteousness and mercy without compromising this truth. So we do well as leaders to learn this combination of standing upon God's truth in a firm and unbending way, but with an attitude and demeanor of mercy so that we can apply it in that way. And I think trying to get dusty, we'll try and look at, in a sense, how that can be done. But part of doing it is understanding the necessity of ruling in this kind of a way. We are meant to do the whole of God's law, right? That's what it is. We are obliged to do the whole of God's law. And then Paul summarizes the whole of God's law in how? In Galatians. How does he summarize the whole of that law? The whole law is fulfilled, yeah. The whole law is fulfilled in one word. Love your neighbor as yourself. Galatians 5:14. That's how he summarizes it. So he's saying the whole of what we have to do, and he summarizes it in love. Okay, so we're getting an understanding there that our mindset needs to be, okay, when we're applying the truth, even into a situation where the truth is desperately needed, we've got to realize that to apply that truth, love is fundamental to it. Love summarizes the whole of the Christian virtue and responsibility. That's what it does. So what should I do? Well, you've got to love. So when somebody says, we just got to love, so please, you have to define this for me, because I don't know what love is unless you can define it for me. So then they'll say, well, love is, usually it's just this emotional, well, I just want to love people. I just love you. Great. Matthew 22, this is 36 to 40. The guy comes to Jesus and he says, "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" And Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." Paul says in Romans 13, verses 8 through 10, "Owe no one anything except to love one another. For he who loves another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet. And if there is any other commandment, are all summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment of the law." Okay, so when we understand that and we see the connection between all the commandments of God and how it can be reduced down to love, then we see this connection of the truth and mercy joining together. So love summarizes the whole of the Christian virtue and responsibility. And then in 1 John 2 and verse 5, love is also said to have been perfected in those who obey God's word. It says, "But whoever keeps his law, truly the love of God is perfected in him." So when we keep the law of God and treat people in that way, when we loving people as God has said, the love of God is perfected when we do it in that way. So how do we as fathers and husbands carry out our dominion mandate with respect to the family? It becomes an important understanding by doing all things in accordance with God's law word. We are to stand upon this absolute immovable truth, but at the same time, this is to be done with grace and love. And this is what we have received through Christ, and this is how God always deals with us, with this grace and truth. As he deals in our lives, as he ministers to us, as he guides us, as he corrects us, he's dealing in that same way. So it's an important pillar in our thinking. This is what Paul is teaching in Galatians 5 when he talks about the fruit of the Spirit. In Galatians 5 verses 22 through 23. "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control." Those are fundamental to how we understand God's love and God's dealing with us. So we demonstrate our love when we self-consciously do everything God has said. However, our doing the Lord's will must always be interwoven with all these qualities. Those qualities we have in Galatians 5, 22 and 23, they sum up the demeanor and the attitude by which we do everything in our life. Even when we're standing, unbending on a principle, we stand unbending on a principle and we present that truth to whoever we're presenting it to in that context of the fruit of the Spirit. That's how the Spirit ministers, through those qualities. This love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, gentleness, self-control. All those things are critical to what we do and how we are to do it. Our doing of the Lord's will must always be interwoven with these qualities. This means the way we ought to apply the truth of God's law word to every aspect of life and to all our relationships is in the context of this, I call it a gift basket for lack of a better word. Because when you read those words in Galatians, that list, we mustn't see them as isolated from each other. We've got to see them as the fruit, because that's what Paul uses. He uses the singular. It's not the fruits of the Spirit he's talking about there. He's talking about the fruit of the Spirit. This is what the Spirit looks like. This is how it functions. So I put all of those things in Galatians 5, 22 and 23 into a basket. And then this is just a picture, by the way. I put them in a basket, and then every time you are applying the truth and the law of God, whatever action you're doing and applying it, you present it in that's the medium that carries it. When we're bringing the truth, that's how it's delivered in that gift basket. So we're to uphold God's law word in a manner that at the same time reflects all the facets of the Spirit's fruit. That word is singular. This is the fruit of the Spirit. And it includes everything that Paul names in those verses. So the believer's doing of God's law must never be divorced from these qualities. And as fathers, as husbands, and it stretches beyond that, but we're just focusing on our families, but it stretches into all areas of life. We've got to remember that and keep ourselves in check by that thing, that this is how. Because if I'm promoting the kingdom, if I'm trying to advance the cause of Christ, then that's how I present that. Now, what action comes out of that, it can vary. For example, I believe a Christian can be the executioner in a just system of judicial system. He could be the executioner and be a good, solid Christian and carry out his duties with the fruit of the Spirit as he's, ministering. You don't have to be violent and angry to the person who is being executed in the sense of aggressive. You don't have to. You've got the law. You're carrying it out and you manifest it with self-control, with all the necessary qualities that are entailed. So that's an extreme example, but whatever we're doing and however we're applying God's truth, because that's how we advance the kingdom. Because that's the Spirit working. The Spirit doesn't work outside those things. He doesn't work in a different way. So our leadership in our families must never be divorced from these qualities. Now, that's easier said than done. And it's something that we need to be aware of so that we can in fact be working on it in our own lives as we're seeking to promote the kingdom in our families as well. So love is not primarily a feeling, but rather a self-conscious action done in accordance with God's truth. So when I'm saying I'm going to love you, even if it means spanking you, then we do it with the fruit of the Spirit. And so it's vital that that's communicated in that way. As long as you're standing on authority, you're acting under authority, God's authority. And to be under that authority, we need to demonstrate that we are under that authority and showing that, look here, I'm standing under that authority in the sense that God expects me to manifest this rule and this whatever it is with this particular attitude and heart. And therefore, I'm doing it in that way. So God's will won't be done if God's ways in doing it is separated from joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, gentleness, self-control, and all those qualities that we see in the fruit of the Spirit. To proclaim or attempt to apply the truth, divorced from these other facets, is a sign that we haven't really understood the truth. We have to see that, and we need to hold ourselves accountable to that, and say, I'm missing something here. Because the way I'm applying this, or the way I'm manifesting, the demeanor, the attitude I'm showing, is showing that I am not understanding the truth I'm trying to deliver. Because we're not just delivering propositions at people. We're delivering God's eternal word, that the kingdom power that flows through that living word. And so we deliver it in the basket that he said we should use. So love summarizes all other virtues. Paul says, to claim to be serving the kingdom without love is to be a clanging cymbal and a nothing. It's Corinthians 13. You don't have love. You're a clanging cymbal. You're just vibrating in my head and it's irritating. No matter what, you could be bringing the nicest, you could be bringing truth, but the delivery is not in a fruit basket. So you're just a clanging cymbal. You're just a noisy gong, which is more offensive than accomplishing anything for the kingdom. Now, it doesn't mean because you bring it in a fruit basket, it's going to be well received, because often it might not be, but that doesn't release us from our responsibility on how we should deliver this thing. So love is the supreme mark of the Christian life, for it is a demonstration of true selflessness. And we do this by obeying all of God's will and laying down our lives for others. So to love is to do, and to do God's will in God's way for His glory. That's what we do. To love is to do, and that's how we do it, for His glory. As heads of households, we are to uphold God's truth in all areas. However, this is how we are meant to uphold it. I'm not going to go through all those fruits. I unpack them more in my commentary. If you have that, you can look it up. But you've got, different applications of what it means to be gracious and long-suffering and things like that. But if our homes, for example, are not places of joy, they need to be places of joy, because joy is fundamental to the Spirit. to the fruit of the Spirit. So if they're not places of joy, we need to bring our minds into submission to Christ and His Word. We need to cry out for the Lord's grace and say, oh God, let this be a place of joy, this home of joy, based on truth, based on principle, based on these fundamental things. But it needs to be a place of joy, and we need to begin living in the reality of that which we profess we are living in. And fundamental to that is joy in the Spirit. So it's with an attitude of true joy that we ought to carry out our responsibilities and apply the truth of God's law to all situations. Our obedience to God's every word ought to flow from a heart of deep, unshakable joy. Long-suffering or patience, because that's contrasted to the flesh of the Spirit, which Paul deals earlier in Galatians verses 19 through 21. The long-suffering or patience is contrasted to outbreaks of wrath, being one of those fleshly manifestations. So to effectively communicate the truth in our homes, we need to be self-controlled, and anger is something that contradicts the truth we're trying to communicate or we're trying to uphold. I'm trying to uphold this truth, and I'm desperate that you grasp this truth, and I'm so angry that you don't. Can you see there's a contradiction there? So we need to realize, when we see that contradiction, say, okay, I need to deliver it in the right way. So does it mean inside I might be angry, upset, disappointed? Very much so, it can be. But we've got to deliver the truth in a certain way. Now, is there a place for anger? I think there's a place for anger. I think Christ got angry when he was dealing with the temple. He cleared out the temple. But I think we need to realize that there are some extreme situations. And I would say, for the most part, we've got to realize that those are the exceptions where the activity becomes one where it appears to be really aggressive. You know, if somebody comes in your house and is trying to hurt your family, I think the fruit of the Spirit there is to thoroughly deal with that person. If it means breaking bones or it means putting a bullet through him, you do it. So I'm not having this false distinction that there's no place for firm action in that way. But there needs to be the self-control. I don't believe Christ manifested this thing, but he was never out of control when he did that. So to effectively communicate the truth of God, we need to be self-controlled, and anger is something that contradicts that. So long-suffering and patience is not something we have the liberty to ignore. I mean, if you struggle, for example, let's say you've got a history of anger. Well, how do you deal with that effectively? You've got to have tools. Say, okay, I've got to deal with this. How do I deal with it? There's different ways. I don't profess to know, but there's one way to deal with it. And that is, let's say that your tongue is very sharp and something sets you off and bam, you just laid out and cut people to shreds. Then there's practical ways you can deal with that. You can say, okay, from now on, I'm not going to respond. I'm not going to open my mouth. What I'm going to do, there's the situation is confronting me. I'm going to go and write. I'm going to have my diary. I'm going to write in this book. It's my special anger book. I'm going to go and write in this book and get it out. And maybe later on, depending on, you know, the circumstances vary, whatever the situation is. But you can go back and read what you've written and say, whoa, that was pretty over the top. And you can rewrite it. Doesn't mean you're not going to say anything. But you can rewrite it. You can work it. You can say, oh, I'm so glad I didn't say that. Because you can't take words back. You can say sorry, but you can't take words back. They're out. They're gone. So write it. This is just a discipline in order to try and break a habit. Because, you know, you can have this habit that has been part of your life. So how do I break it? And I believe this is one dusty possibility of how you can break it. You just go and you're writing and you say, I'm not going to speak whatever until I've written. And when I've finished writing, I reread it and then I work through it and edit and whatever. So that then, okay, now what is the real issue here? What am I trying to accomplish? What am I trying to do? So you're thinking through it, you're working through it, and then you can deal with it. And you use that policy until you've now managed to gain control of that habit. That habit now has been changed so that the mouth is not speaking before the mind is properly engaged or evaluated. So that's just a tool. It's kind of just trying to offer a constructive thing that you're trying to break this habit. And then once you've got control over that, you can put the writing away, or you might keep it, whatever suits you, however best serves the kingdom. Because that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to accomplish that. Do you know how your children interpret an angry countenance? It's hatred. They interpret as hatred. When you manifest that anger, that's how they interpret it. Now, you know, with all your heart, you're not hating them. You're just upset. And their interpretation is, my dad hates me. And what that does is it starts to break down the relationship. Whereas true correction and true dealing in righteousness, even when it's firm and straight, builds the relationship. Because you're not violating the relationship. You're coming with the fruit of the Spirit and you're laying down the situation and saying, this is the truth. There's violations. These are the principles. This is what's going to happen. The relationship's not being broken because they're being brought to the light of God's word, to the truth. The fruit basket is there. the righteousness and peace, or the righteousness and truth and mercy have kissed each other in that sense. And I believe that's the vehicle for dealing in that situation with whatever circumstance you're dealing with. So control, instruction, and discipline build the relationship, whereas anger destroys it. So that's a motivation why we want to deliver ourselves and bring ourselves into subjection to not being angry, because it destroys relationships. And so even though you're giving the truth, even though you're communicating this thing, the anger is alienating you. And it's what we're trying to do is win the heart, keep the heart, whereas anger breaks out. And younger guys who haven't got children that you're dealing with, this goes for friendships as well. The same policy with your siblings, with one another. You have no liberty to manifest anger to a sibling. You're destroying the relationship. You're destroying the family. You deal with righteousness and truth, bringing it to the Word of God, using the appeal system if necessary. The appeal system, as we use in the nation, there's appeal system. We don't take the law into our own hands. There's the channels you go through without becoming a tattletale where you make an issue out of everything. But, you know, you use the system, appealing to parents and saying, okay, we're trying to solve this out, but you're trying to solve out your own issues. But avoid anger. Anger is destructive in every situation it enters into. So if you can learn that at an early age, how to deal, even deal with great offense, because there's going to be offense throughout your life. It's going to come your path. So deal with it now. Learn to deal with offense in a way that is constructive and biblical. And then bitterness takes over. And bitterness is destructive. I don't know if you know people who are bitter. I have had close contact with people who have allowed bitterness to sit in their life, and how that has just completely and utterly destroyed them. Until to them, black is white. There's absolutely no ability to communicate rationally with them. They cut themselves off from everybody, because everybody is interpreted in this bitterness and this sway, and there's no relationships can be maintained and held. And it's just a self-consuming thing that eventually just eats you up and puts you on a path where you almost appear crazy. It really is. And so we don't allow it to get a grip in our lives. Bitterness must be dealt with. And the way we deal with bitterness is by not getting angry and not dealing in anger and having these vibes within our relationships. And the way we do that is the truth, submitting to the truth, staying within our jurisdictions, all these things that we've been covering, and remembering the fruit basket in all our transactions and interacting. We want to do that. Even the stranger who offends you at the supermarket does something absolutely stupid, we've got to remember, how am I allowed to respond to this person? God says only one way. The truth, that doesn't mean you get away with it, but with graciousness. You know, when a policeman, I have no time, I think it's absolutely immoral when a policeman gets out of his car and he's abusive with the person he's pulled over for a traffic violation, or he's rude. There's no justification for that. He's got the authority and the law behind him. Now, I'm sure he gets a lot of fact, but if he's reacting to somebody who's being otherwise, it's different. He's got to use he has to use some muscle sometimes to bring them in. But there's no justification for his being otherwise when they've pulled over a person. This person's done a traffic violation, pulls him over. He can be pleasant. He's got the authority. He's got the structure of his judgment system. He knows what punishments he can give out, what fines he can administer and can't. Hi, ma'am. How's your day? He can deliver it in that sense. So I'm just using that as an illustration, but at the same time saying in the same way, we need to see ourselves, because we too have authority. And we must not use our authority in a way that is abusive and out of line. So we administer it in the way that is in the fruit basket, because we're not apologizing for our authority, and we're trying to promote and uphold the standard. And now, often, sometimes maybe a policeman gets shitty because he's bending the rules in eyes, pulling people over for using the law as a, you know, to make up his quota or whatever it is. So he's kind of bending the rules from a sense of applying the law in a just way. We want our children's hearts. And within your families, with siblings, you want to be strengthening the hearts, your relationships with one another, as your siblings. You know what a big lie is amongst siblings? Is that it doesn't really matter if they don't have a good relationship with their brother and sister, and they think they can have a good relationship with somebody outside the family. It's a lie. That's the world's lie. That it's possible, that I can establish a good relationship with somebody outside my family, but I can't establish a good relationship within my family. So you're deceiving yourself if you think you can do that. You've got to realize, I've got to come back, because this is the training ground for true relationship. This is the training ground for building and establishing relationships. It's here. And so I work on this. This is where God has placed me. This is what He is doing. That's why we should expect siblings to relate in a God-honoring way. The world accepts, well, that's brother and sister. That's just what they do. You should have seen my sister. She was 10 times worse than that. Hey, where are you coming with your thoughts from? That's pagan. You shouldn't have acted like that, and you didn't know any better if you were a pagan. But now, in the Christian family, that we mustn't accept that. We must expect God's standard. We need to be working on these things. So don't apologize for your authority. You stand before God and have it from Him. But it also means you have to enforce it in the way He said, in the fruit, which is singular, of the Spirit. So this is the quality and the character of the Spirit's working. The flesh works according to a different standard, but that's what we call to. You know, that's kind of in a nutshell of, although we've got this authority and we need to be upholding it and we need to be uncompromising with the truth, we've got to have this basket that we presented in. It's critical to our calling. And thus we cannot become wild or loose canons and laws unto ourselves. That's the balance in the way we administer justice. If something happens, I think it's vital if there has been true offense caused by you in the way you've reacted to a situation. I think even if you were right in the principle that you were trying to uphold, if the administering of that principle was wrong, offense has happened. And so you need to go back and make right and say, you know, the way I did this or the way I said that or those words that I said, I'm really sorry. I shouldn't have said that. It shouldn't have come out like that. You know, so I think you just have to be open and ask, please forgive me for what I did. Because what you've recognized there is the angry response has hurt that relationship. But the asking for forgiveness, will you forgive? Not, you know, if I've offended you, you know, it's kind of forgive me. Because asking somebody for forgiveness is an important part of the actual healing that comes about. Because they are then committing themselves and saying, yes, I forgive you for what you did. And to their mind, that's releasing it. And that's what it should be. Now, biblically, in God's eyes, He holds them to what they have confessed with their mouth. Yes, I forgive you. They cannot then hold that as the grudge. That's when it comes into the 70 times 7 situation. They've forgiven. They can't use that now as a grudge against you and bring it up 6 weeks later and say, ah. You say, no, but I came and dealt with this. So, you know, if you said, if I offended you, you know, he's not the person. Even if the person says, well, okay, he hasn't necessarily forgiven you. It might sound a bit semantics, you know, just using words. But I think that's an important biblical principle, that when you're asking, please forgive me for that action, what I did wrong, and they forgive you, I believe that's part of the restoring again and strengthening that relationship. Because when that person realizes that you saw that you were wrong in how you reacted with your anger, I think it definitely helps them to move back toward you. So it's an important part of restoring. And once again, it's for the good of the kingdom.